Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, your community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. Author and motivational speaker Nikki Tosato has a very compelling life story to share in her book, From Prostitution to the Promise, I'm Still Standing. Indeed, Nikki Tosato tells a very harrowing story of youthful innocence being snatched and exploited. It's her story, and she's sharing it with us here on Praise 100.9, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Nikki, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I am excited about having you here with me this morning because you have a very compelling story. And I think the folks in Charlotte, particularly those of the church community, they need to hear your story. It is really, really compelling. The name of your book is From Prostitution to the Promise, I'm Still Standing. Tell me about your story.
Well, I grew up in Connecticut up north, and my father was an alcoholic, and my mom was sick all the time, and I kind of grew up in this atmosphere of being a spoiled little girl, and as I grew up, I went to high school. I was kind of tall.
And you are tall.
I am tall. Well, I kind of shot up in middle school, and you get that awkward, insecure feeling, and you're trying to find your place. You know, as any kid does, it's trying to find their place with what group. And I found my place with the wild side. I wasn't a wild child. I just became a wild child. And I started smoking weed. I went through high school. I graduated 79 smoking weed and drank. Snuck the alcohol, partied, lied to my parents, and I did everything. And I went to go to college.
Well, your story is almost similar to mine in terms of the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of us, we started out drinking alcohol and smoking marijuana. We called it weed back in the day. And so, you know, there's a similarity here.
Yes. And this is, you know, easy. It's so different now, but I don't know what they call it now anymore. But back then it was weed and reefer. You know, I went on to wanted to be our nurse. And I went to college, took my basic courses, and I met a young man. And, you know, our girls, we wear our hearts on our sleeves. And, you know, I told my friends I fell in love. And, you know, it's something I always say, and I've told my daughters, you know, the devil don't come in your face and say, I'm going to ruin your life. You know, he comes in as a serpent, and he sleazes in.
Right, right.
And I fell in love as I thought I was, and I began to hang out with him. He wined and dined me, and I was just so in love, like a little girl, like a princess. He treated me as a princess, not knowing that he was a pimp.
Wow.
And he had other girls.
And there was no indication at all?
No indication.
Wow.
It slowly began as dating, hanging out, doing the normal things you do as you're dating. And one night he took me to an exotic strip bar where other girls were dancing, and one of the girls was his sister, was on the stage. Beautiful family, good-looking family. That was a whole new world for me besides high school and college. And I started drinking, and I was very insecure anyhow. Being that my dad was alcoholic, I was always living in fear because my mom was sick. I thought she was going to die. I'd live with those dreams and fears and anxieties, even from a little girl, that my mom was going to die. So I think all that was just kind of locked up inside of me, and I wanted to be accepted and loved. And
which is rather interesting because you're very attractive. So
thank you.
So why would, you know, outside of the drugs and the alcohol, why would you have such low self-esteem that would allow an opening for an individual like that?
Someone asked me that recently. I looked back because I was talking about my book, and I looked back and someone asked me, why were you so insecure? And I said, you know, when you grow up, kids are mean.
Yeah.
Some, not all of them, but kids are just very outward, and they say outward things. And when I begin to get tall and skinny, the first thing they would say to me is Big Bird, or the darker skinned black people would call me Yellow, and just all these names that were out of order. That wasn't who I was, mm-hmm. but they became who I was.
Yeah.
And it made me insecure.
Okay.
And I was well taken care of as a child. My mom took good care of me. My father took good care of me. But the house was dysfunctional, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It may look good on the outside. The clothes may look good. But inside, that door is dysfunction. Not so much on the physical abuse side, but my father being an alcoholic, my mom being sick, my father taking advantage of it. I adore both of my parents. They're both gone. And that put me in a place of insecurity. So all I wanted was a boyfriend.
Yeah.
All my girlfriends had boyfriends, so I finally had a boyfriend. And one that didn't mess around on me, so I thought. The high school guys, that's what they did. This guy played the game well. He got my heart. And once he got my heart, I stepped into this dance bar. And I didn't dance right away, exotic dancing. I just kind of would go drink, look around. Very strange atmosphere. It was like a whole new world, as the Disney song says, a whole new world.
Yeah.
And it began a couple of months of this and that, going in and there. All of a sudden, I find myself with a thong, the bra. I'm on the stage with a sister getting schooled on how to strip dance.
Now, what did he say to convince you to do that? I mean,
that I was beautiful, mm-hmm. and then that I could go to mall. Mind you, I graduated at 17 years old from high school. That I can go to mall, I could buy these clothes, and I was enticed
mm-hmm.
outside in my little home world, my little reefer, my little backyard, smoking on the porch with my little friends and having a little bit of, you know, back then Heffa-Ruffa when it was out, the beer, and that was all I knew. That was our friends. That was our group. That's all we did. And when we go home, this was a whole different atmosphere. As I stepped into a different level,
mm-hmm.
and it was scary, but it was an excitement to it. And the guy was very kind to me. And when I started to dance, because I danced, I ballet danced when I was a little girl. I tap danced. I played the flute. I played the piano. I played the guitar. And I did all those things. Looking back now, I would never finish them. And I realized growing up, I wasn't a completer. I never completed anything that my mom or dad paid for. I just do it. And I love dancing. I would always stick to dancing.
Right,
I was
right.
in the step grooves. I did all of that. So the dancing part wasn't easy, but it was more on the seductive side. So you're not dealing with just I'm dancing, you're dealing with seduction.
Yeah.
Then you're dealing with enticing these men, and you're a young girl. And I had to go from drinking alcohol to smoking weed to stepping in the back with girls who are doing mainline cocaine. So this will help you take away your fear, you know, take a little bit of this. So, you know, you try the coke and you sniff the white line. That was back in the day when in the 80s, everybody was sniffing coke and you put in the dollar and you put the straw and you sniff the coke. I liked the high. It took the fear away. I got, you know, easy doing it. Anything you would do, you become comfortable with it. And I became comfortable being a dancer. I did that for a few years. And one particular night, and I'm picking this night for a particular reason. One particular night, the pimp, because I'm going to call him for what he was.
Yeah.
He was not my boyfriend. He was a pimp. And he was manipulating me, and I was manipulated. He took me and asked me to go with this older gentleman. It had to have been maybe in his 70s. And he said, he's going to give you some money to touch you. And I'm being very honest right now. He need to touch you. And I kind of shunned it off a few times. And he said, well, he'll give you the money. He's going to give you a lot of money. And he did give me a lot of money. And I got in a car with this guy, complete stranger. And I rode with him, did what I did with him. He gave me the money. And this is when the pimp thing really popped up. We came back, and this guy, the pimp, asked me for the money. And I kind of was like, no. I remember when this man touched me. I remember I felt like my body was crawling out of my body.
Yeah.
I'm a kid. And I felt like I was crawling out of my body. I felt like I wanted to unzip myself and jump out. I felt disgusted. I felt nauseated. I cried. It was a horrible experience, very horrible, and didn't know what to do with my mind. So I took my mind and I put it at a beach, because that's one of my favorite places to go. So I went to the beach in my mind to stay out of what I was doing. The pimp took my money. From that point, it was now go with this guy, go with this guy. And I would do it because now it's no longer this is fun, this is fear.
Well, that was my next question. Was there fear in all of this? I mean, were there any threats
that
you needed to do this? Or?
Yes, it became threatful. Like I said in the beginning, the enemy doesn't come in and say, hey, I'm going to ruin your life. He sneaks in. So he had to pull my heart in, so I thought I was in love. And because of my own insecurities and my own self-doubt about who I was, I didn't know who I was. So it was easy to pull me in. I was one of those easy ones to pull in. I knew deep in my heart, all this is wrong. I knew that. This, my upbringing, this is wrong. This is stuff you see on Superfly movies on TV.
Right, this isn't
who I am. And
well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we've all seen those movies.
Yes.
And there are compelling stories within the movies,
yes.
You know, but of course it's a glorification of it.
Yes, it is. And that's something I just don't like at all. But I know that at that time I was fearful, because now you're taking money, giving me very little. We would say if it's $400, he's giving me $40 out of it. And I'm using that as an example. And I'm not understanding that. But yet I'm still doing this.
Yeah.
You understand? And it went from the strip dancing, to the men in the bar. So this gets easier because you're sniffing more coke. You're getting more high. You're doing more drugs. I was still living with my parents. And I was still going home. And all of a sudden, I would see girls walking up and down the street, and I didn't know what these girls were doing. But in my heart, I really knew what they were doing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I would tell myself I didn't know, because I have seen the movies. And I saw the rabbit coats in the 80s and the fishnets and the platforms and the heels. And
But you mentioned you were living with your parents at the time. Did they know that you were doing this?
Of course not. They thought that I was at maybe a party with a friend, or I was hanging out with a friend. You know, I made up my lies. And I would come home a certain hour out of respect to my parents' rules.
Yeah.
I loved my mother and loved my father. So I set to their rules until one night the pimp started putting a quota on me, like a piece of steak. Steak is a certain amount of pound. This is what you're going to go out, and this is what you're going to make. And you're going to hit the corner with them girls out there, and this is what you're going to do. It'll be all right. It's easy. Don't worry about it.
What went through your mind at that very moment?
Somebody's going to kill me. Somebody's going to murder me.
Yeah.
Not him. Somebody out here, some strange man. Somebody is going to find my dead body. Somebody is going to call my parents and say, we found your daughter. That's the first thing that really ran through my mind. And I kind of just said, I'm a people pleaser, so okay, but the pouncing of the heart, the fear, the sweat, everything's coming out of me. Everything you could think of fear was coming out of me, but I said, okay. And I'm saying okay, thinking, don't say okay, you know, but I went out. My wardrobe began to change from my little jeans and my little girl teenager clothes to these provocative clothing. And I got arrested. I think I was 19. Around 18 and 19, I got arrested. I had a student loan at the time for our college, taking liberal arts courses for nursing. He had got to the point where he was bullying me so bad that when I got the check cash for that class, he took the money. He caught me downtown in Connecticut, took that money from me, said I couldn't have it back. If I went shopping and brought clothes and snuck off and brought my own type of clothes for me, because it began to be that type of relationship where I would have to go sneak off, and he would catch me, and somebody would say they saw me, he would take my clothes and say, well, go make the amount of money you spent on these clothes, and then I'll give you your clothes back and take my bag from me. And I would go out there and I would have to prostitute, make him, if I spent $200 or $300 worth of clothes. If I spent $50 worth of clothes, I would have to make that, give it to him, and he would give me back my clothes.
Were there any instances where he physically abused you?
Yes. It became very abusive. It went from verbal and it went to physical. He blacked my eye. He would take me behind school yards and he would pummel on me. That's the only word I could use. He would pummel. And in my mind, I'm thinking, why is this man hitting me like this? I don't understand.
Now, the potential for your parents to see this is fairly obvious. Did they see the...
No, I think there was denial. I think it was denial. My father would drink. My father was what they would call nowadays a functioning alcoholic. He wasn't a known street. He dressed well. He was functioning. My mother was sick. My mother was a very laid-back, sweet, sweet woman. And I hid with sunglasses. I hid with a bunch of makeup. He would hit me enough because of my complexion, I would have to overload the makeup, kind of talk to the left or talk to the right or look down and not directly at her. So I made myself invisible in the daytime. I'm looking for a job just so she could see me more toward the night. And it would break my heart.
Oh, my God.
And I would go in my room and cry. And I knew I was tearing my family's heart apart.
Yeah.
And my father was an ex-cop.
Oh, okay.
So I got arrested and I lied. And the pimp gave me a name and said, your name is Linda Randolph. Don't ask me why I got down there and did not know how to spell Randolph. Randolph totally blanked. I'm like, Linda Randolph. So the cop said, she's lying. So they took me in the room and they fingerprinted me, found out my real name. And then one officer coming to the back and said, this is your father. And I was like, yes, boo-hooed and boo-hooed. And they called him. I was like, don't call my daddy. And they called my daddy. And that was the worst ride of my life home.
So you had to reveal at that moment to your father what you were actually doing?
Yes, not in that car. No. In that car, it was just silence. And me looking out the window. And because my mom was sick, that's the one person I really didn't want to face.
Because I
loved her so much, I didn't want to crush her.
What did you say to your father?
My father asked me, what was I doing? Of course, he had a few choice words. And I lied, nothing. I don't know why they picked me up. I don't know what's going on. And of course, they told him what was going on. And I got home. And we finally pulled up and got in the house. And there was just an uproar. My parents and an uproar. And I just shut down. Because I what are you going to say?
Yeah.
And the only words I remember saying to both of them was, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And I meant it when I said I was sorry. I didn't know how to come out of it. And every whisper in my ear said, you're not coming out of this. You're never going to come out of this. This is what you are. This is what you become. You're not a nurse.
Now, in terms of your mother, I mean, what was her reaction? I mean, emotional blow to her.
Yes. It was like, if I had to describe to her, it was like a hammer that hit her heart. Because my mother never said, besides, I'm going to spank your butt, go to your room, you're punished, never ever called me out of my name. And she called me the B word. And that just threw me for a loop.
But you understood at that moment,
then
you kind of reconciled the fact that, you know, you hurt your mom in that way.
Yes. And when she said it, it wasn't even about me.
Yeah.
See, this is a different generation now. Back then, that's my mom. And I just felt like, call me what you want. I deserve that. And I didn't care if she called me that, because at that time, I just thought, you know, I hurt her so bad. And she was the love of my life. Yeah. My mom was the love of my life. So was my dad. But that's mommy, you know. And she said it and walked away into her room. And we kind of all separated that night. I vowed to try to get my stuff together. I did not. I think I ran more. My decision was, I think, you ruined your life, you ruined your parents, you hurt this person, you hurt them. Everybody in the street knows everybody, so everybody gossiped about me. So I decided to go deeper. I was never a mean, rebellious, kind of mean kid. I wasn't that child. I wasn't that kid. I had a respect for elders, and I just think something inside of me just wanted to run. So I hung out with people who dealt heavy-duty cocaine, people who worked for lawyers, people who were airline attendants, big people partying. That was kind of like, oh, my goodness, these people are doing drugs and they're flying airplanes. And, you know, I'm sitting in their parties with them with heels on and these expensive clothes because everything started out pretty.
I'm forced to ask this question. What is going through your mind at that moment where, you know, you're with an individual, with a guy, and you're about to engage in that, in the activity? What's going through your mind at that very moment?
I think the first thing that goes to your mind, because at some point you begin to block, but what goes to your mind is, as a young person, this is the most disgusting thing, I've ever done in my life. Because you don't, even if a young girl has had sex with, a 19-year-old girl has sex with a 20, 19, 18-year-old guy, it's kind of an age. But when you're laying there with older men or the different culture of men or different age group of men, it's a range of sleeping on top of another man and another man, another man, another man, and you just become numb. At some point from the beginning of the disgust, and you begin to numb because the drugs are going to numb you. You harden your heart.
What about these men? Did you get a sense that they had any care in the world about what they were doing with you?
No, those men, and I did this from, I graduated high school in 79. I started in the 80s, so all of the 80s. I was in and out of jail and prostituting all those years. Those men, I could say two out of all those years, I know two of them did care about me because they tried to help me. And that, it shocked me.
Did you turn down that help? What happened?
I did because I didn't believe them because there's no trust issue. You understand? You build no trust. Nobody trusts you. You don't trust nobody. You live in a world of no trust. You live in a world of abandonment, rejection, pain, abuse, rape, guns put to your head, and you live in that world, and you kind of, your friend's getting murdered that you stood next to last night, and today she's dead,
and
the police are telling you, and all these things are happening, and thinking this could be me next. So you just begin to do more drugs. And got pregnant. My first pregnancy, I aborted it. And I remember looking out the window thinking, I just remember thinking that was my baby. I can't even explain that. I just rubbed my stomach and I'm so disappointed. So you got to figure, I just did that at a young age. It pushed me further into the darkness. Because the more I did, the more I heard, you can't turn back now. You can't turn back. So I had to keep moving forward with the pain. I hurt my mom. So I was out of state. I would call my mother, my father, I'm getting a job. And I would lie to them because I didn't want to hurt them. Did they believe me till this day? I could tell you, I don't know. But I would lie to them because I wanted them to think I was going somewhere because I was known to go somewhere and I was going nowhere. And I went from a high class call girl. And then I would sit in the high-class bars and sit in there, have my little drink and have my heels and, you know, pick up high-class men from out of New York and out of town and out of California and make good money with the pimp. And, you know, he beat me and make me do what I wanted to do till one day that ended. The pimp ended. I went to jail, and I kind of woke up.
Now, when you say the pimp ended, what does that mean?
The relationship with us had stopped at some point because I went to jail, and I got sentenced. This wasn't just go to lock up, go home. This was real prison, 30 days, and that was like eternity for me. I'm scared. I'm scared of the women. The women are big. I'm going to get raped. It's the movies on TV. Here we go. I just stayed to myself. I had some time to think. And I ended a relationship with this man. And while I was in jail, I met a woman because I figured men are bad, men are evil, men hurt women because this is what I get out of the picture that I'm in. So I'm going to be a lesbian.
Okay.
So I jump into that. And I went home. The pimp came, found out I was home, hunted me down, I pulled my father's police gun out on him in the house, sat on my front porch, and threatened to take him out. Mm-hmm. I really didn't want to. Mm-hmm. I just was scared of him.
Yeah.
And he called me crazy, and he disappeared, and I never seen him again. And I went on to be with this young lady.
And how long did that relationship last?
That relationship lasted, I would say about 5-6 years, okay, off and on. It was very, I think, even more abusive than the man was.
Really?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I was with her. I met her in prison. She was a heroin addict.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know she was a heroin addict. I didn't know anything about heroin. I knew about coke, pot, and my weed. I didn't realize in my head, okay, coke is just as bad as heroin, but in my head, I'm better than you because I'm not doing that. Because I heard about the monkey on the back. That's what they said back then, that the heroin was a monkey on your back. You couldn't get rid of it. She understood my woman woes because she's a woman. She came out of abuse, molestation. She had a daughter. And we became really good friends, and we shared those things together. I went back home clean. No drugs. I'm going to get my life together. My intentions were always good. And I decided, well, let me go move with this girl. She wants to move with me. And I went out, it's still in Connecticut. I moved out of that area, Connecticut, moved in with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it became hell on wheels because she ended up hiding in the bathroom with her makeup bag. And I didn't know what she was doing with the makeup bag. Well, actually, she was in the shooting heroin and coke.
Wow.
That's when diabetics used to get the needles in the packages.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, you know, she was shooting heroin. I was interested, so I sniffed it. So we would drive down to Harlem, pick up loads of heroin, and I sniffed it, liked it, and I vowed I would never shoot it, never do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm better than that. I had to keep some dignity.
Even if it's a small,
a little piece of you.
Yeah.
That little piece was mine, and
off
that little
limits
piece wasn't mine. It wasn't, because I ended up skin popping. Basically, it's like getting a flu shot.
Mm.
And so I just got the skin pop up in the arm. A little faster, hiding and sniffing it, but not as fast as mainlining it in the vein. And that's what she was doing.
Well, Nikki, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
Actually, this is going to be a two-part show.
Okay.
Because we really want to get to your book. Again, this is some very compelling stuff. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, we'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9. We'll be back in a moment.
Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. Next week, we'll continue our interview with author and motivational speaker Nikki Tosato. Her book, From Prostitution to the Promise, I'm Still Standing, is a revealing look into her youthful innocence being snatched, a life of drugs and prostitution. I promise you'll want to hear the rest of her story, as her emotional journey will bring tears to your eyes and having you praising God for deliverance. All next week on Community Voices. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.